prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Well, welcome to Truth Revolution. This is where faith and reason coexist. I am Dave, and with me is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
Hey, Revolution Church is here for all of you, regardless of what you look or smell like or wear clothes like.
Hey, I'm here, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And I smell wonderful.
I do too, actually. But you know what? We're more God cares more about what's inside than what's outside of a person.
Yeah.
And so we don't really care what your outside's like. We care what's going on the inside. We all just want to learn about God together. Hey, they discovered water on Mars, Dave.
I saw that, and I had to endure billions of conversations with my friends and arguments about it.
So. Billions. I'm going to use our cracked acronym, the D for dialect, and I'm going to say that you were using hyperbole.
I was.
But you're trying to communicate that. You had to have a lot of passionate discussions about this.
I did.
What was the discussion like?
Well, the discussion was basically like, hey, you know they found water on Mars. Well, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Well, you know what that means, right? I'm like,
what?
It probably doesn't mean what you think it means. That there's life on Mars? Yeah, there's probably not life on Mars. You know, although I'm not going to rule out the possibility, right?
We don't know. We don't
know. We don't know. But the thing is that just because you find water does not mean that there is life. Now, do you need water for life? Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have found that scientifically that water and carbon make the best life, you know, so.
But like we're going to talk about today, life is a lot more complex than just add water.
That's some quality H2O.
Right. Thank you, Adam Sandler. All right. So NASA tweeted on September 28th, we now know water flows on Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have an article. Did you hear new findings from our Mars reconnaissance orbiter provide the strongest evidence yet that liquid water flows intermittently on present day Mars? Using an imaging spectrometer on MRO, we found hydrated minerals on slopes. Have you seen the picture of that?
Yes, the mysterious black streaks.
Yes,
yeah.
And it looks kind of like grainy chalk flowing down a mountainside.
Looks yummy.
Charcoal or something.
Right.
It does look yummy. The mysterious streaks on Mars. One thing the researchers noticed was that the darkest streaks appear to ebb and flow over time. That means, you know, come and go, move from side to side. Right. During warm seasons, they darken and then fade in cooler seasons. So they are using this information and they've determined that there really is water there on Mars, which is kind of cool.
Right. But something that it is not.
What?
Is not, we do not, they don't have rivers that are flowing that you can swim in or fish in and stuff like that, you know?
No. When you think of water on Mars, you might be thinking like, oh, there's an ocean and it might be teeming with life. No, that's not what they're talking about. Yeah. I mean, not yet. We haven't discovered anything like that yet, but I mean, Mars is extremely cold. And this isn't water that you could go and drink.
Right.
This is, actually, they continue in the article. Mars is so cold, how could liquid water flow there? Great question. Since this liquid water is briny, the freezing point would be lower than that of pure water. Also, these saline slopes appears on Mars when temperatures are above minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Whoa.
So we're talking really cold here.
Yeah, it must be really briny.
Very briny water. So this is this stuff. I mean, this is not like drinkable water. This is mixed with other types of things, and it's going to lower the freezing temperature of the water so it can still continue to flow.
So what exactly is briny? Is that like salty?
Well, I don't want to get into the scientific part of that right now because that's going to take like a 20-minute explanation, and we only got about 25 minutes left right now.
All right. I guess I won't look it up on my phone then.
Well, you can look it up if you want to. All right. You can give a 30-second description of
probably
it.
Probably not, but you go right ahead and talk, and I'll do
Dr. Jeff Zwiering, who we have on the show periodically, he wrote an article about this, and he's talking, this is a little bit to do with the brininess of it, but he says hydrogen comes in two forms. Now, this is important because water is H2O.
Right.
Right. So you got two parts hydrogen. And he says hydrogen comes in two forms. Normal hydrogen, which is an H, with no neutrons, and deuterium with one neutron, deuterium. So water can contain either form of hydrogen. Did you know that? Interesting stuff. But the heavier mass of D, deuterium, gives scientists a way to uncover more details about the history of water on Mars. The heavier mass of D compared to H means that it escapes from the atmosphere more slowly. Consequently, over time, the ratio of D to H will increase. Data acquired from powerful telescopes in Chile and Hawaii show that the global DH ratio on Mars today is 6 times larger than the value measured for Earth. So basically what he's saying is, okay, if you have deuterium water, this water escapes from the atmosphere slower than hydrogen water.
Right.
And so you can measure and see, okay, if there's all this water there, how much hydrogen water is there compared to deuterium water? And you can measure and see. And that what they find out is the Mars rover Curiosity found the DH ratio on Mars grew by a factor of 2 in the last 3 billion years. Furthermore, ancient Mars meteorites have a DH ratio roughly 20% of the current Martian value. Okay, so they find meteorites that came from Mars, and the DH ratio is different.
Gotcha.
Now, these meteorites are 3 billion years old, or sorry, the other meteorites are compared to the 3 billion year old stuff on Mars. They compare them, and it says this: Mars started with at least 5 times the amount of water present today, because they're comparing the meteorite ratio of DH to the Mars ratio of DH, and they can do the math and figure out how much water used to be there.
Right. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, there's some awfully smart people that are doing the math on
that. Yeah, really, really intelligent stuff. But like, so we found water on Mars, but what's even cooler is like, boom, it used to be 5 times as much as there is right now.
That's crazy.
But here, okay, did you want to say anything about briny before I continue?
Yeah, briny, in 30 seconds, I can
30
break
seconds
it down.
Or less.
Yeah, sea salt. Salty water like the sea.
You've got 25 seconds.
Sorry.
We got to fill the time.
We can fill it with silence.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
That's right. So let's continue on.
Okay. So this Dr. Zurek goes on. He says, finding liquid water on a distant planet often carries the implication that life must occupy that watery environment, which is exactly what you were saying.
Right.
The Bible paints a different picture. Even though Earth started with a covering of water, it was hostile to life.
Right.
Only through God's transformative work was Earth prepared for the introduction of humanity, then declared very good. Now, we're going to link to this article. He goes through and shows you how the water on Earth was probably green. It had a lot of iron in it.
Got a fish tank at home that's green.
Yeah. It was not suitable for life for billions of years. God prepared it. The remarkable thing about Earth is that 4.5 billion years after Earth formed, it retains an abundant supply of liquid water that hosts a stunning diversity of life.
Yes.
So this is the difference. Over billions of years, Mars has become less habitable, and Earth has become more habitable.
Now, how would you explain that?
That's interesting, isn't it?
Right. Well, the fact is that, now, if I get what he was saying, is that Mars has been losing the hydrogen type of water and retaining the deuterium type of water, whereas our planet has been obviously retaining its hydrogen.
Well, not only that, our planet has been filtering water, preparing the water to be clean and livable for animals in all sorts of different ways. I mean, the ways are innumerable.
Right. It's almost like it was designed that way.
It's almost like there was someone cleaning the fish tank.
Right.
I wonder, very interesting.
I wonder what that means.
God. Right? I mean, this is the point we're coming to, right?
Yeah.
That like, wow, this planet looks like there was more than just accidental stuff happening to it, because water doesn't just show up in massive quantities and end up clean with the right DH ratios, with filtered water, with life that starts to, and I mean, go back and listen to the shows that we did a month ago with the guys from the Discovery Institute. I mean, the odds that even like a single cell mathematically could come into existence, or even less than a cell, right?
Yeah.
Protein. Protein. Proton.
Well, a proton too.
Yeah.
You know,
but even less likely.
We don't want to leave that out.
That's the cosmological argument, though. We're talking about the teleological argument today, basically. Mm-hmm. Right? All things that are designed and specific and complex had a designer. And guess what? Our Earth is specific and complex.
Right. And you can have complex without being specific, but that gives you basically just complex and nothing really.
Yeah. I mean, you could take 1 million pieces of the motorcycle parts, put them into a box that's very complex, lots of different parts, they're laying certain angles, and you can measure those angles, the way these parts are laying, but it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
But once you put those parts in a very specific pattern, then they all have to be in the right place.
Right.
You can get a motorcycle.
Right.
And you can drive.
And you know what? I am... I'm going to posit here that it takes more than that analogy to put together a planet that sustains life than it would put together a motorcycle out of a bunch of parts.
Oh, man. Absolutely. I mean, what's more likely to happen? A motorcycle accidentally fall together?
Right.
Or an entire planet accidentally fall together with life that... multiple kinds of life, a food chain, water hydration cycle, the planet's in the right place. I mean, actually, Hugh Ross from Reasons to Believe, we're going to link to this too, made a list of things that are needed for life to occur. And as Dave was saying, you need more than just water.
Right.
Look, we're excited about the water thing on Mars. Oh, yeah. That's why we're doing this show today, because the thing is, the water is cool. Dave, would you like it or dislike it if we found aliens?
I would like it, actually.
I would like it too, unless they were the aliens that Stephen Hawking predicts.
I didn't listen to what he predicted.
Oh man, he thinks we should not broadcast signals out.
He thinks they're going to be violent to us.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking says, look, if aliens do exist and they do come to planet Earth, it's probably going to be a lot more like when Columbus landed in America, except this time we're the Native Americans.
Right.
And he goes, that didn't work out very well for the Native Americans. Right. And this, if aliens came to Earth, it's probably not going to work out well for us because they're probably looking for a place to live. So he didn't think we should try to contact aliens.
He is a pretty smart guy.
He is a pretty smart guy in a lot of ways. But nevertheless, we think it would be kind of neat. I mean, alien life could exist. It doesn't affect whether God exists at all.
Well, even if we're just talking about microbial life and stuff like that, you know, that would be just very interesting.
Yeah, that would be.
To know that there would be some other environment aside from the Earth that could actually host life.
That's right. And life would occur wherever God puts life.
Oh, amen.
We don't have any problem with that. But what are these things that are needed for life to occur? Well, just a few of them. I mean, they have over 90 reasons listed on the thing we're going to link to on our website, truthrevolution.tv. By the way, you can go to truthrevolution.tv. You can ask questions there.
Yep.
You can provoke us there.
Provoke us? You're looking to be provoked now?
I like to be provoked.
Right on.
Or ask questions, challenge us a little bit.
Yeah.
Contact us. Let us know you're there. But after you do that at truthrevolution.tv, you can go and click on this link that we're going to provide, and he lists 90 things needed for life, like the galaxy cluster type. If it's too rich, galaxy collisions and mergers would disrupt our solar orbit. If it's too smart, there'd be insufficient infusion of gas to sustain star formation for long enough time.
Wow.
So the galaxy cluster, the type of cluster your galaxy is with, affects whether or not your life can actually happen.
Right. Now what that's talking about is the density of the stuff that's in the galaxy. Is that what they're talking about?
Clustering.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of different ways that can play out.
Right.
Okay. The timing of solar nebula formation relative to supernova eruption. Now, don't ask me to explain this one completely.
Right.
But he says, if it's earlier, then the nebula would be blown apart. If later, nebula would not absorb enough heavy elements. And we need heavy elements in a certain amount for life to occur.
Well, yeah, that's where we get our heavy elements is from, from out in space.
Yes. Another one, the biomass to comma infall ratio. I'm just including some that you
what?
Would. My point here in including some of these is just to make us go, holy smokes. Okay, I knew we needed water.
All of a sudden,
and I knew we needed a sun that was the right size, but we need biomass to comma infall ratio to be right for life to be here?
All of a sudden, I feel dumber.
He says, if it's smaller, if the ratio of biomass to comets is smaller, then greenhouse gases accumulate, triggering runaway surface temperature increases. You cannot live in 500 degree temperatures.
Right.
If it's larger, then greenhouse gases decline, triggering a runaway freezing. This is a problem for life.
Right. Yeah, right. Because if too hot, can't happen. Too cold. We see that with the three bears and Goldilocks.
It's a really good analogy.
Yeah, thanks. I am a layman.
Can something other than carbon, though, or water produce life? We're going to come back and talk about that on the other side of the show. In the meantime, you need to get to truthrevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Because, look, we're here to learn about God. We care about you. We're interested in the truth, logic, and your heart.
Amen. Because God cares about, like we said, what's on the inside.
That's right. So come on out to Revolution Church. Right now, we're at 9 and 11 Sunday mornings. If you're listening to this show as a later, check our website to find out the times you meet. TruthRevolution.tv. Revolution Church is at revo.church, R-E-V-O.church. But yeah, come on out. Ask us questions on the website. Get out to Revolution Church. We'd love to have you, whoever you are.
Right.
We'll be right back.
truth shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
In the previous truth shots, we showed that Matthew 24 referred to a time very near Jesus' day and not the end of the world.
So what was Jesus talking about in Matthew 24? Well, just listen, see if you can figure it out.
Matthew 24, 1 through 3 says, Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call attention to its buildings. Do you see all these things, he asked? I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?
Jesus was talking about the destruction of the temple in Matthew 24. At the time of Jesus, it had stood for over 500 years.
But in the year 70 AD, the Roman Emperor Titus captured Jerusalem and destroyed the temple only a few decades after Jesus saying it would happen.
Jesus correctly prophesied its destruction.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. You know, God cares more about what's on the inside of a person than on the outside.
That's right. Join us Sunday morning at 9 or 11 a.m. online at revo.church.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Most people here hadn't been for a long time, if ever, so you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11 a.m.
online at revo.church.
That's R-E-V-O.church.
Revolution!
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same, to be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Ephesians 1:4 says, for he chose us in him before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. We were chosen by God to be saved before the world began. But listen to the rest of this verse. It says, in love he predestined us to be adopted as his sons through Jesus Christ in accordance with his pleasure and will. God chooses to describe his grand cosmic plan for the redemption of humankind as adoption. Now God chooses words carefully. And Jewish theologians, including Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, believed that history from the beginning was moving towards a pinnacle mountaintop when God would redeem his people, that is Jesus Christ redeeming us. And all the climax of all history, physical, emotional, spiritual, is described as our adoption because of Jesus. Consider adoption today. God uses the word as the pinnacle of what he's done for you and me. And it can be the pinnacle of what you do for another human being in this world.
Truth Revolution.
Hey, Jeff.
Yo, what's up?
You know they found water on Mars?
What? I've heard some guys talking about that.
Right.
Just a few minutes ago.
Yeah. But, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, that my friends were all saying, hey, because they found water, they're going to find life.
Nope.
But we just went through a list, a short version of the list that they have on reasons.org. About things that are needed for life, and it's not just add water.
No. I would love to find alien life, but our friends over at Reasons.org have shown that life is more complicated than that, as Dave just pointed out. Right. And what we're getting at here, if there really are over 90 or hundreds of things that need to happen for life even to be possible, we're not talking about the statistical probability that a single protein could come into existence, because that's infinitesimally small in itself. But even for the right conditions to be there for that protein to come into existence, it's almost impossible. You have to have the right biomass to combustion ratio. You have to have the size of the moon, the size of the sun, the planet.
Yeah, you touch on a very good point there, because just because the environment is right for life doesn't necessarily lead on to preclude, hey, there's life.
No, I mean, when I was dating people, the environment was right to get a kiss at the end of the night a lot of times. Didn't always happen.
Ooh.
You could just shut your big yapper.
Thank you very much.
Right, but you know, the point is, the environment being right doesn't always mean the event will occur.
Right.
And even, first of all, the environment being right for life is statistically not easy. But even if it was right, then it's still statistically impossible. You need to go back and listen to some of our past shows about that. But let's talk about this. What about something other than carbon or water-based life?
Right.
John Lewis, A planetary scientist at the University of Arizona has said this.
He said, despite our best efforts to step aside from the terrestrial chauvinism and to seek out other solvents and structural chemistries for life, we are forced to conclude that water is the best of all possible solvents and that carbon compounds are apparently the best of all possible carriers of complex information.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so from the Privileged Planet, page 35.
If you'd like more information, you could read the Privileged Planet book. But basically, the scientists agree carbon's where life is at.
Right.
So we're probably not going to find silicon-based life. Probably not going to find androids floating through space who can speak to us.
Well, you never know, because carbon-based life can build androids. There may be carbon-based life somewhere.
Okay, I recant my last statement. Okay, so in 1543, this all kind of comes back to this idea. In 1543, Copernicus, you heard of Copernicus,
yes,
right? He published an article. He said he argued that the Earth was not stationary,
mm-hmm,
right? This led to this mind-blowing thing. Like, whoa, you mean the Earth is not still and the whole universe doesn't revolve around the Earth?
You mean we're speeding through space? Why don't we fly off?
Yeah, why aren't we? We're not the center of the universe anymore. And this was now called the Copernican principle, the idea that the Earth occupies no preferred place in the universe.
Yeah. Didn't he take a lot of flack for that?
Well, that's what people think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people think.
Okay.
All right. It led to this principle of mediocrity, saying, oh, we shouldn't assume that we are in any way privileged. Right. We're just a hunk of rock flying through space because we used to think we were the center of the universe, but we found out we weren't. And it's just chauvinistic to say that we're special.
Right.
That's what Carl Sagan said this.
The delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe is challenged by the point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in a great enveloping cosmic dark. That's kind of scary.
Hubble discovered that patches of light that we thought were just gas were actually galaxies, mm-hmm, some even larger than our Milky Way. And the Milky Way, that's our galaxy, has more than 100 billion, with a B, billion stars. But there's even many galaxies.
Right.
Like, wah! Bruce Jakowski, in the book Search for Life on Other Planets, said this.
Because of the tremendous change in worldview, Copernicus' views were not embraced by the church. The history of his persecution is well known.
Dave?
That's what he said.
What? He's wrong.
He is.
People say this all the time. They're like, well, you know, alien life. Ha! The church is off on this one. Or, hey, you know what? We found water on Mars. You Christians are so wrong. Or, well, you know about Copernicus, right? Oh, the church persecuted him. Now, listen, no.
Poor Copernicus.
These are like, I don't know. These are rumors. These are not true.
Wait a minute. These are ancient rumors?
No, here's a reality check. Yeah, yes, ancient rumors. Here's a reality check. Okay, the Archbishop Nicholas Schoenberg, who was a church authority, he wrote to Copernicus in 1536. Now, I'm not just telling you a story.
Wow.
I'm not just saying what I think about Copernicus. I am quoting the Archbishop Nicholas Schoenberg writing in 1536 to Copernicus himself. And this is what he says.
He says, some years ago, word reached me concerning your proficiency, of which everybody constantly spoke.
So he's complimenting Copernicus.
At that time, I began to have very high regard for you, for I had learned that you had not merely mastered the discoveries of the ancient astronomers uncommonly well, but also had formulated a new cosmology.
Okay. He's admitting Copernicus found something new.
Mm-hmm. In it, meaning his new cosmology, in it you maintain that the Earth moves.
Oh, it's coming now.
That the sun occupies the lowest and thus the central place of the universe.
He just admitted that Copernicus put Earth out of the center of the universe.
Right?
I bet the hammer's going to come down now.
Therefore, with the utmost earnest, I entreat you, most learned sir, unless I inconvenience you.
Wait. He's going to tell Copernicus what to do.
Right.
I bet he tells him to shut his big yapper.
He does. He says, communicate this discovery of yours to scholars.
Wait. What? Most learned sir, unless I inconvenience you, communicate this discovery of yours to the scholars.
At the earliest possible moment.
What?
To send me your writings on your sphere, on the sphere of your universe, together with the tablets and whatever else.
Tables.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
And whatever else you have that is relevant to this subject.
Okay, the church's actual stance on Copernicus.
He came down really hard on him.
Yeah, their actual stance was, publish that stuff! Right.
Yeah, and Copernicus probably didn't want to write anymore, and so now he's like, the church is coming down on me hard, I gotta publish this stuff. Man, he came down on pretty hard.
He even dedicated his book to the Pope. Okay, Copernicus was not in trouble for this. Right. The church wanted him to publish it. The only guy, the only scientist we know of who ever was persecuted by the church was Galileo, and that was for political problems, mm-hmm. not scientific discoveries, if you want right. to get into it.
So, well, yeah, let's be honest. The church is as actually, even as far back as ancient times, has been behind discovery and stuff like that. And why is that? Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to find out how God works. They wanted to find out what it was that God did to make our universe the way it is.
That's right. Dave? I think it's time to answer Bible contradiction.
All right.
Bible contradiction.
All right. Today's Bible contradiction is from an incredible interactive chart of biblical contradictions.
Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
It's so funny.
It is. It's crazy. Oh, it's huge.
It's huge.
All right.
Of course, we're going to answer every one of them.
This contradiction comes from the Old Testament.
Okay.
Of course, why not?
Why not?
Exodus 31:18, when the Lord finished speaking to Moses on Mount Sinai, he gave him the two tablets of the covenant law, the tablets of stone inscribed by the finger of God.
Okay, so he's on Mount Sinai, mm-hmm. got the tablets.
However, 1 Kings 8:9 says there was nothing in the ark except the two stone tablets that Moses had placed in it at Horeb, where the Lord had made a covenant with the Israelites after they came out of Egypt.
Horeb?
Or Mount Sinai?
Well, Dave.
Do tell.
We're going to use our cracked acronym.
Figured we would.
Yeah. And we're going to use the first C for context.
It's almost like you're cheating now.
We're going to use the first C for context. But we're not talking about context like read the verses around it. You know what kind of context we're talking about? We're talking about geographic context.
Okay.
All right. So my sister-in-law is like from the southeast.
Yeah.
And she says that when they talk to people about computers, they don't say press a button. They say mash a button.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you told me to mash a button, I'd like get a rubber mallet and
right.
crush it.
Yeah.
But apparently, you know, if you're from there, you say mash a button. So you have to understand the geographic context and how they're talking and the local area. Well, if you just look at a map, Mount Sinai is in a mountain range known as
Horeb.
Horeb.
Oh. Well then.
So it's kind of like someone saying, well, Moses got the tablets on Pike's Peak. And then later someone goes, yeah, when Moses was in Colorado. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Was it Colorado or was it Pike's Peak? Which one was it, huh?
Right, I get you.
Well, it's the same thing. And so that's the answer for Bible contradiction today. It is both the same place.
Bible contradiction.
Well, now then.
Dave, that almost brings our time today to an end.
Almost.
So we're going to say a couple other things here, but I really want to encourage you to come on out to Revolution Church.
Amen.
Like, this is one of the main reasons we do this show, is to help you guys realize we love God, we love people, but we also love the truth. Like, we're not scared of science.
Right.
We're not scared of questions.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, God calls us to use the brain he gave us.
That's right.
Right? And here's the thing. If there's a lot of you people out there thinking, and I know there were, because I used to be that
used to one be
time.
One of them.
Yeah. That thinks, hey, I can do church by myself. I don't need to be a part of a church because, you know what? Everybody else sucks. And I don't need church to celebrate God or yeah. to, you know. But what I've learned is that by becoming a part of a community in a church, I actually get stronger mm-hmm. faithfully and I become more knowledgeable.
Well, God designed us to work with each other.
Right.
I mean, every time we talk, you're sharpening my brain.
Right.
And every time we talk, I'm hopefully sharpening your brain a
sometimes.
Little bit. So that's just the way it works. You get with people, they get invested in your life, they get to know you as a person. And God starts to work through them in yeah. your life.
And something strange starts to happen. And it's like, people, you find out that people actually care about you.
Whoa.
And then you actually find that you actually care about people.
Whoa.
And then you pray together.
Whoa.
You start doing things together. And before Whoa. You know it, you feel like, hey, it's a family or
That's
something.
That's right. So, coming out to Revolution Church, at least, tell you what, try it four times.
Four times.
Just try it four times. Just come four times in a row and see what you think after that.
There you go.
Just try it. Just try it. Money back guarantee.
Right.
Something like that. I don't know. We don't. There's no way to charge you.
Well,
anyway, come on out to Revolution Church. Also get to our website, truthrevolution.tv, and ask some questions. Search around. We got over 500 pieces of information on there. Mm-hmm. Shows and truth shots. Send us your questions, send us your comments, send us your ideas, please. We'd love to hear from you. Come on out to Revolution Church, because God loves you.